you like to connect with us on Spaced Out Radio? Head to spacedoutradio.com to check out the latest shows, guests, and sponsors. And don't forget to sign up for the Space Travelers Club. You'll find all you need at spacedoutradio.com. Welcome back to Spaced Out Radio tonight as we kick off a new week. Happy Thanksgiving to all my Canadian friends and family out there. Good to have you along for the ride. Tomorrow night on the show, all the way from Scotland, Samantha Mowat will be with us. She's interrupting her family vacation to do the ET experience with us tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern time, as we get going at spacedoutradio.com. The SOR password for the night, if you're a space traveler, Heterothunkus. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Bill Cardwell always screws me up with this thing. Heterothonus. There, that's the way I'm going to leave it for tonight. I know it's probably wrong, but I'm okay with that. So we'll just keep it at that. Thank you, Bill Cardwell, as he sets a password each and every night on Spaced Out Radio. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter, at Spaced Out Radio. Give our Facebook page a like, Spaced Out Radio Show. On Instagram, I can be followed at Dave Scott, S-O-R. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Spaced Out Radio Show, and our website is spacedoutradio.com. You can find us on TuneIn and also catch all of our archives on iTunes as well. If you're not a member of the Space Travelers Club yet, it's only $5 a month. With that, you get your name put into monthly prize draws, access to private group interviews, access to a special section on our website, and so much more. You can also read up on our latest blogs, the SOR Spacewire, by our news director, Eric Markham. And if you have had a sighting, doesn't matter what it is, ghosts, Bigfoot, Dogman, extraterrestrials, garden gnomes moving, we want to hear about it. Fill out an SOR Sightlines report on our website. Our lead investigator, Mike Schmidt, will get back to you and file a report. All information is 100% confidential. For the final time tonight, we introduce Michel Deschamps. He's a Canadian ufologist with newforce.com. Michel, welcome back.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad to be back.
Got a couple questions for you from our audience before we kick things off here. Paul is asking, Michel, do you believe, as a former MUFON investigator, that MUFON has been infiltrated? Many people say their reports seem to go nowhere and their evidence is accidentally lost or misplaced.
Yeah, good question. Actually, infiltrated is it's pretty damn close to what really happened. Robert Bigelow, who used to own, or maybe still owns, Skinwalker Ranch and some aerospace. Actually, he's the only civilian to actually own his own space station. And he was either a member of MUFON or had access to MUFON somehow and apparently stole or was given several, like tons and tons of information. It's almost as if he was on his own on his own mission to discover what was going on. And I think he's almost like on the border of paranoia because he thinks that he's going to be safer if he goes to his own personal space station in the actual realm where the UFOs actually, you know, proliferate. And he thinks that something bad's going to happen to Earth or something. Now, it sucks because that he's done this, because that's when MUFON really looked like it was in total disarray, and there was a lot of changes made to the foundation, I guess, of that group, and a lot of accusations back and forth, and he simply disappeared from sight, I guess. But he's kind of a weird fellow, that guy, because the logo on the side of his building is actually like an alien face. And so there's either he's paranoid about the aliens doing something to the Earth and he's going up to his own personal space station and stay there, or and doing whatever he's going to do with the information he stole or took or was given. I don't know how many years ago that took place. It would have been maybe within the last 5 to 10 years, because I was a member right up till 2009. And then when I tried to renew my subscription, there was a typo in the annual fee for renewing. And at the same time, by then, I was totally disillusioned with the fact that they were sitting on cases, like interesting cases, that would have convinced the public that there's something going on. One particular case, for instance, was this fisherman in an aluminum boat. And he had a fish finder and a GPS, and he was abducted and woke up 2 hours later in a different lake with his boat. And the GPS proved that somehow his boat had been floated from one lake to another. Now, evidence like that, you can't deny. And that is something that just pisses me off, that they're sitting on this and not telling people or informing people, maybe in other ways than waiting for funding to come through and for them to do a TV show. You know, if you've got enough money, I doubt very much that they have that much money, because it's a UFO group after all. Nobody gets rich off of UFOs, unless you're Bigelow. But they should just like have their own production company and produce go independent. You know, just like we have alternative news stations online, which are telling the truth more than the mainstream radio and media, they should do the same and use this information and just run with it and release it to the public, and stop bitching about the fact that nobody's on the same page, or they're not believed, or there's too many skeptics and debunkers out there. Other than that, I think it's been in total disarray ever since. And I don't think the left hand is talking to the right hand. And they're too busy making money. That's another big thing, whether it's Stephen Greer or anybody else making a huge amount of money off this UFO thing, when it should be, the information should be given freely to the earth, to the people of this planet, because for thousands of years, we've been asking, one of the questions we've been asking, are we alone? And all those files and data that we've collected, MUFON has collected, could definitely say, no, we're not alone. And never have been. You know, it's like setting us back to the 1300s. You know, I've worked with a guy who's in charge of us in the back, and he's a flat earther. He believes the earth is flat. But there's people like that, just like 5% of the population doesn't believe we ever sent men to the moon. And that's going to be like that. You can't change that. Well, there's certain things you can change, and that's if you're willing to freely give the information out. And I guess I'm like Robin Hood. I've taken the 10,000 files from the Australian archive, and I've placed it on my website. I've taken the FBI documents from their website, and I've placed it on my website. And this is long after I've already bought parts of the files from Bruce McAbee of the Fund for UFO Research, who knew that years later those 16 bundles of FBI files would be on the FBI website. Nobody knew. I have the 9 downloads from the UK. So far, I don't believe it's, like I said before, I don't think it's all the total amount of all the documents ever written about UFOs. I think they're keeping the juiciest of the juiciest cases ever on file. You know, radar tracks, UFO crashes, there's obviously documentation on that. It's been reported that at crash sites, there's film crews filming the entire thing. You know, I personally believe the alien autopsy that was aired in 1995 is real. Why? Because I spoke to Katie Frankovich, who was a wildlife photographer. She lived, or she still lives, in South Dade, Florida. And she personally saw six-fingered aliens through her screen door. And here's a six-fingered alien laying on a slab on this 1995 film footage. You know, doesn't have a belly button, doesn't have, genitalia. Although the second and third airing of the show, they blurred that area out. And they didn't need to, because alien beings don't have genitalia. It's never been reported. So there's things that are just too important to just pass by. And you can't sit on information. I'm totally against that. And I'm at a point where I even look at copyright as being synonymous with censorship. So, you know, people are making money off the deal, and it's fine. We all have to survive one way, and this world works works on money. It rotates. Everything revolves around money. But one day money will disappear, and we'll have to find a new way to exist, you know. And information and knowledge is the true power. It's not money and corruption and all the bad things that we have to deal with to the present day.
One other question for you from our audience member. This is coming from Michael. He is saying, Michelle, we'd like to hear a little bit more about your personal sightings. And have you ever had visions of a UFO on the ground?
No, I wish I did investigate, like I said, a landing case on Manitoulin Island. But my sightings started at age 9 when I saw... Initially, it was a metallic sphere. On my website, I have a personal page called Personal Sightings. In the margin, all the most important pages are in the margin. And I have to tell you, my web host passed away in August. So initially, the website domain was transferred to Bangladesh. And having so many problems uploading my stuff, the audio files, the videos that I've placed up there, and some of the PDFs or a lot of the PDF documents, I've recently found somebody more local and on the same continent to manage my web, to manage my domain. So I'd give it for sure another week, and everything should be up and running fine. But the pictures are up there on my personal sightings page of what I saw, the few sightings I could sketch. And then the few photographs I did make off of the videos that I shot, I saw a videotape one UFO in daytime, and I had made a detailed report of that one. The clouds were at 6,000 feet. This thing doesn't look anything like a plane at 6,000 feet, and I have seen planes because the Sudbury Airport is not too far from where I lived then. Now I actually live in the city of Sudbury. Before, I lived 20 miles north of here. The nighttime sighting, this object, which looked like the comet Hale-Bopp, but orange in color with an orange halo, actually flew between the Jupiter and the moon and just quickly disappeared behind the leaves of the neighbor's tree, which is, again, you could hear me sigh on the video because it's out of frustration because the sightings were seconds in duration, and it's just frustrating. You don't expect to see something whenever you go outside, and therefore you're never equipped with a camera to photograph. I get bitched at work, you know, why aren't the UFO photos, like, you know, crisp and clean? Well, most of the time the UFOs at night are a light source. You can't make out what structure they're attached to. In the daytime, they're putting out as much reflectivity off the sun if they're metallic of some kind. You can't make out the detail. It's not like a car out in the street where you can go up and kick it and you can make out the outline. So I've had several sightings. My favorite sighting is the one I had at the radar base, which is no longer in existence, but was made famous in 1975 due to the flyover of UFOs, where it was tracked on radar. Four military installations in the States were interfered or intruded upon at the same time. This is October and November of 1975. The Falconbridge radar base is no longer there, but I had a sighting there in 1990. And my personal impression was that the UFOs were there investigating as to why was the radar base no longer functioning. It had been closed down in 1986-87, and I have as a souvenir, I went to the base, I snuck up there when it was still standing, and I managed to get that piece of paper that you get in the elevator that talks about the weight distribution, and it actually says Department of National Defense, CFS Forces Falconbridge, Pineview, Ontario. And that's my personal souvenir of that base. There's nothing that survived off that base. And that UFO was the next day I went back and we measured one of the buildings. I went up there with two people from a local little tabloid paper. And after they had finished their smokes, we proceeded to measure the building by walking one side and then the other turns out that the building was 40 feet by 40 feet. So whatever I saw the night before or the weeks before that was 40 feet in length and pulsating right, a reddish, pinkish light that was pulsating irregularly, not even like a heartbeat. That was the sighting that made me come out of the ufological closet, so to speak. I called police to report the sighting because at that time I hadn't joined MUFON until 1991. And they kept me online long enough to determine whether or not I was nuts. So I said, okay, the police is not the place to call the reports. Although, in 1975 incident, a lot of the witnesses were police officers and a nursing staff at a nursing home that had seen the UFOs, the smaller objects, the 40, 50-foot jobs that were flying around town. A few years later, I got a phone call. Automatically, my sixth sense kicked in and says, I got to tape record this guy, even though I didn't get his permission. So I set my tape recorder on, and it was a radar technician who described how what they tracked on radar in 1975 was larger than the largest plane we had in our inventory. And it hovered for over 2 hours between 42,000 and 72,000 feet at 30 nautical miles south of Sudbury, which is over the town of Lively. And it's 1975. And I don't remember, I was in school then. I was in grade school, grade six. And I don't remember hearing the sirens going off of the radar base. But years later, in 1990, when I had my sighting, I was my 20s, I knew what a plane was. The airport is exactly at eye level to that base from one hilltop to the next. And so that was a sighting that made me come out. And after that, I've had other subsequent sightings and after my 10th sighting, I stopped questioning myself questioning my sanity. I knew that there was something there.
I had a landing. So I have seen a UFO 150 yards away from me. It is a miraculous sight. It is an emotional sight. It is something that is very, very incredible to have that, because when you have an up-close and personal experience like that, it is something that you cannot... Oh, I don't even know how to explain it, Michelle. You cannot imagine what you go through as a human being. And how small and finite and mortal you feel when you see something that up close and personal. Because in reality, to the mainstream, this isn't supposed to exist.
Yeah. Did you have a feeling that you weren't supposed to be there? Was that the feeling you got, kind of?
Oh, hell no. Hell no. They actually, whoever they are, called me outside. I thought I was having a migraine headache when I had that incident happen. Wow. And I realized shortly after it subsided that it wasn't a migraine, that it was actually them, whoever they are, pulsating shapes on my head. It started off as a square in the front of my head, went to a circle on the left side of my head, and on the right side of my head, it was a triangle. And then I got hit with an absolute anxiety attack that I needed to go outside. And within minutes of that happening, there was the ship.
Wow.
So, go ahead.
Have you ever sketched it? Have you ever sketched the ship? Like, could you sketch it even to this day?
If I had someone to sketch it for me, I would. I can barely draw a stick figure, man.
Yeah. That's why I've only sketched a few of the ones I saw, because, I mean, how do you sketch a pinpoint of light? Or, well, it behaves, obviously, in an unusual way, but, you know, that sighting we had in 1997 is also depicted in the drawing with, including the Big Dipper, and it doesn't do it justice. I mean, I had a camcorder with me, but I forgot to bring my charger because it's not like I expected to go to the Mississauga First Nation and see a bunch of teepees, but I forgot my charger, and my camcorder at that time was the one with the full-size VHS tape inside, and it needed direct power because it kept dying out. The battery pack was no longer good, And with the sighting we had there with that object flaring up to a bright glow and then a super bright glow and then down to a dull glow and then go black for about 7 seconds and doing that 11 times as it crossed the sky, I could have screwed up with my camera and still gotten good footage if I would have had like my small Sony Handycam of what I have today. It pisses me off to this day that I would have had amazing footage of something that just couldn't be explained. I mean, it's an egg-shaped object. It catches on a light glow, then a super bright glow, and then go down to light glow again. And for 7 seconds, we counted as it was black. And then it would catch on the light glow again, then the super bright glow, and down to a light glow again, and then black for 7 more seconds. And it did that 11 times. I tried to sketch it, and the sketch doesn't do it justice. So I know what you mean. I wish I knew somebody who knew how to use Photoshop or animation program and maybe try to reproduce it that way. Even for other people's reports that I've gotten, I've tried to locate somebody who could just visually do animation that would be so impressive. It would be exactly, more or less a good reproduction of what the people have actually seen, because it would be more impressive that way. And wow, yeah. But I can understand the shock, because even me investigating that landing case on Manitoulin Island in 1991, and it had happened in mid-September 1990, it's like I got the heebie-jeebies. Like I didn't belong there, but it was weird. And I subsequently went back to see those traces 3 years later in 93, and after that, they could easily dissipate or be brushed off. It was a 3/4-inch layer of gravel on top of limestone. And there was these two, I call them indentations, but it wasn't indentations. The gravel had been blown away, leaving these two donut-shaped shapes between 6 to 9 feet across each. And they were 16 feet apart from center to center. So that's why, after talking to Ted Phillips out of Missouri, these were two separate objects. So one was possibly assisting the other one. And he says, oh, yeah, after the typical race trace cases, they look similar to the Delphos, Kansas trace. And I've seen other ones since then that look like donut, where the mound in the middle is still there, whether it's dirt or grass or gravel. And then on the outer perimeter of the circle, but in the actual circle itself, the gravel or grass is blown away or flattened or whatever. And it's like, wow, after a while, it gets boring, Ted Phillips would say. We're still trying to convince him to write a book about physical trace cases. I just got a copy of a French one done in Canada, and I corrected the English version one, which I'm supposed to get a copy of, and it also lists the photos that were given to me of the Manitoulin landing case before I investigated it. And so those are convincing. The landing cases are, I wish they would happen more, because in today's time, I think it'd be pretty hard pressed to place it under the realm of being the military or whatever, because there's oddities to all these sites. You know, I have one landing case in a place called Galt, Ontario, which took place in 1957, and it had something reminiscent to the case that happened with the Travis Walton case in terms of the tree's accelerated growth. In this one particular one here, it says basically additional proof of the incident came after an analysis was made of the scorched earth discovered on the spot. Paul Hartman, a writer for the Galt Reporter, says the change in soil composition at the site was incredible. Topsoil dug up from the landing area glowed in the dark. Also, when grain samples from the burnt patch were studied under a microscope, it was found that they were healthier and sturdier than the samples taken from elsewhere in the field. Finally, the insects there had undergone a certain instability and peculiarity in character. Ants, where the saucer had touched down, were larger and stronger looking than their counterparts in untouched areas. The anthills themselves, according to Hartman, were much higher than usual, and a spider, which had accidentally found its way into a jar containing soil from the Galt UFO landing site, had grown to about 10 times the normal size for this particular species. So this kind of evidence should be mentioned more often than not, because it's what seals the nail in the coffin, so to speak, you know, as to the validity of this phenomena taking place on this planet several times over. And Ted Phillips has recorded over 3,000 such landing case reports, personally investigating 500 I was lucky just by pure luck to investigate this one. It was initially reported to the local media radio station as a couple of crop circles. But then when I saw the pictures, once they were developed from the negative strip that was given to me, because on the negatives, you couldn't tell that it was soil, like gravel and limestone. You know, crop circles are known to just occur on grass and wheat fields and stuff. And when I saw the pictures, once they were developed, I says, holy shit, this is limestone and gravel. This is not a crop circle. This is something else. It's a landing site. So I was like, holy crap. And I was all excited, and it was like cloak and dagger. I was given the negative strips before the pictures were developed, and the pictures are on the website, by the way. And I never got to find the guy to give it back to him. And he was, his last name was McAllister. And I said, yeah, the McAllister's on Manitoulin Island, but could never find him again to give his negative strips back so he can, you know. So I... really weird how things happen when it comes to UFOs and investigating cases and stuff. You wind up with the weirdest evidence that could just, like, you know, seal a case in a court case and put somebody behind bars for life without possibility of parole.
And that's the thing. I do believe there is a lot of evidence out there that is provable. As you said, I mean, we've convicted people on murder charges for less than that. But
yeah, circumstantial evidence.
Exactly. But on the flip side, that never seems to be good enough for the skeptics out there. It never seems to be good enough for the government out there. And it really makes you wonder what they are hiding. And it has to be the technology. That's the only thing that makes any sort of question,
yeah,
you know, answerable. It has to be the technology.
Yeah, and for those, like, I just thought of something. You just reminded me of something that's just totally logical. We suspect the military to know a lot more. If that is so, this is, why the hell would they have CIA operatives infiltrate UFO groups? Mm-hmm. Obviously, UFO groups are getting more information than the military. Nobody's reporting to the military. Nobody trusts the military today like they did in the 40s. Mm-hmm. So... that's why I think ufological material-wise or data, I don't think the military has that much. I think there's another group within a group that actually a very small group. The smaller the group, the easiest it is to control themselves and police themselves. And I think those are the real people behind the secrecy. It's not somebody that we would know just by looking at them or whether they wear fatigues or not. But the thing is, it's like, if they know so much, why the hell are they spying on UFO groups? Or I had my phone tapped. I had my phone tapped in the early 90s after the sighting at the radar base. A lot of weird things would happen. I couldn't use my phone. There was static on the line. I had to go to the local tavern and use their payphone outside to call the only person who would believe me at the time. And I had met that man from INCO at that time, Don Campbell. He's the first one you'll see. When you go to my audio clips page, he's the first one who has several first-hand, second-hand, and third-hand stories, all in audio, interviews I've done with him, of the sightings that took place in Sudbury area. And I called him on the phone and he believed me right away. But it was weird. I've had people hang up after me and my friends and say, did you hear double clicks on the phone line? I said, no. I couldn't hear them. But then I talked to Errol Bruce Knapp, who's my late, recently deceased web host, pirate radio guy of the heydays. And when he was in Toronto, Newfoundland, Ontario suffered the same fate. They had a lot of phone taps, low phone problems. And it's like, yeah, it's not imagination. It's not bullshit. You know, they are seriously struggling to get as much information as they can, whoever they are, and they're spying on UFO groups because we're more likely to have the ones to have the most information. And we do. I mean, it's the way it is. And, you know, it's kind of funny that, you know, we suspect them of having all this technology back engineered and stuff, and yet they're still, you know, spying on individuals and trying to close down WikiLeaks or whatever, you know, and now they're villainizing whistleblowers instead of glorifying them, because whistleblowers like McKinnon, like Snowden, we need people like that because they are calling up all the bullshit that's going on behind the scenes that we are told to look the other way, that we are unaware of. All the bad shit that's being done to us as a society, they are the whistleblowers. We need them. And Linda Howe even said that there was going to be an upswing of a lot more whistleblowers coming forward, because some of them on the inside will be so pissed off at how this is all being used and against us and whatever. They're going to turn the tables, and there's going to be so many whistleblowers, hopefully, that will just, you know, we'll get the transparency that we want. So far, it's everything is secrecy this, secrecy that. You know, people bitch about the politicians. Well, the politicians are only puppets. It's the people with the money behind them that control everything. And if whether they have the technology advanced back engineered from UFOs or not, whether it's workable or not, whether it's usable or not, they are holding it back from us to keep us from having free zero-point energy, from keeping us from not using oil or hydro. You know, here in Ontario, we have the highest hydro rate ever. I'm still paying up till January. We'll be paying like every 2 months. But now with Catherine Wynne and the carbon tax and the hike in hydro, I mean, it's bullshit. The stuff is run on nuclear power. Most of the time it's produced by nuclear power. There's got to be a point where hydroelectric power is almost kind of in a weird way free energy, because it's just being propelled up the line by magnets, and it circulates in one direction. Maybe we should just pay only when the system goes down or something or whatever, and have some people at the helm to keep an eye on the nuclear power plants if that's what's solely producing our hydroelectric power. But other than that, man, there's going to be innovations that are going to be suppressed, just like many inventions have been suppressed, that could just clear us of all this bullshit and make us be the civilization we're supposed to be at this stage in our existence. You know, Copernicus or Galileo's discoveries were held back for 200-300 years, you know. So we would have been 200 years, 300 years further along in science by now if they hadn't been quieted down or burnt at the stake or whatever. It's, you know, so, yeah.
Let's get to a couple more questions here. John would like to know, in your experiences, have you ever been followed or encountered any men in black?
Nope, never. Never been. I've been followed by humans in a really scary way, but never by men in black. No, I know what to look for. Like, there's a discrepancy with men in black ever since the movies came out. I love the movies, but the real men in black are definitely alien in origin. We don't know. Well, some indications seem to indicate that they're automatons, because they speak in a monotone voice. And in one particular case, the person, the man in black, actually excused himself from talking with this woman because he had to go and recharge. Now, who the hell says that? You know, and a lot of times, like John Keel would report on some men in black reports where witnesses were right behind the vehicle of, you know, with three men in black in the car, and they would round a corner, and there'd be no way for that car to disappear, and yet that car would be gone with the three occupants, the three men in black. You know, so there's something really weird about them. But now it's like, oh, everybody's a man in black. You got FBI agents wearing black. They're driving black U.S. SUVs. You know, so there's a mishmash there. You know, there's a lack of distinction between the real men in black of the past and whatever agents will wear today. So, no, I've never been approached by a telepathic being. I know somebody who used to be a nurse here in town. She's moved away. At age 17 in the 50s, she actually encountered a 7-foot-tall man in black on the railroad tracks. Telepathic, spoke to her, and she was freaked out. Because we don't have 7-footers in this town at all. I've met only a few people that were really, really that tall. But in the 50s, it was a really rare thing. And so, no, I've never encountered them. I don't know if I would like to, but maybe from a distance, a safe distance.
You know, it's funny because I have been asked numerous times on this from guests off the air or whatever, and even listeners, have I ever been approached by Men in Black or any government officials or anything along those lines? And the truth to the answer is no, I haven't, you know. But I also know, and I make it very publicly known, that my show, much like any other radio show, doesn't matter how big, how small they are, they can make a difference to the listener. They're not going to make a difference to government policy or government hidings or cover-ups or what they're doing in black ops. It's just not going to happen. So yeah, the way I look at it is, why deal with that when we can deal with the experience? And I've never had a problem with it, and I hope I never do. You know, that's just the way it is. Getting to another question here, this one from Robert. He is asking, do we really need the government to weigh in on this? They have lied and covered things up all along. What kind of validation do we as experiencers need from them when the aliens have already disclosed to us through their through our experiences?
I totally agree. We don't need the government to tell us what's going on. The experiencers, whether you just had sightings or you actually made contact by being an abductee or an experiencer, we know more. It's like a doctor trying to tell you what's wrong with you when you know your body more in depth and detail than what the doctor could ever find out. So, we don't. The government, they obviously are lacking in certain things that they're struggling for, and maybe they look to us as people who know the answers. I mean, I know that abductees are under observation because they may have information that the aliens may have passed on to them that the military would desperately want to know. You know, and it could be nothing. It could be just, you know, talking about their favorite dish, what they like to eat. But they want to own every technological aspect and know everything to do whatever it is that they want to do at the expense of the rest of us who are left in the dark and having to deal with this on our own. We used to have hypnotherapists. Still some hypnotherapists are looking into this. I haven't found one in town yet. I knew of one, but I've had people that really needed to talk to somebody like that because their experiences were very, very earth shattering and stuff. But they won't look to the government for answers. You know, the government's lied so many times and they've lied about everything. So now you got people even second guessing everything from the Apollo landing to whatever NASA is doing. You know, and NASA, never has a straight answer. So it's like, you know, in SETI, SETI, they're just as bad. It's a silly effort to investigate, as Stanford Friedman would say. I mean, they're studying, you know, systems that are far away and stuff, but they're looking at computer screens with spikes and shit, and yet they're not looking outside, you know, looking at the sky with binoculars. You know, I'm not guaranteeing you're going to see a sighting the first or second or third time you go out, but if you do it long enough, often enough, you're bound to see something. You know, I've seen many satellites, and I've also, on two occasions, I've seen the space station. What's the difference between space station and satellites? Well, it's the same thing. They're traveling at the same speed. I think it's 17,000 or 27,000 kilometers an hour. But it's slightly about 3 or 4 times bigger than a satellite. But same speed. Doesn't stop all of a sudden, take off and shoot off in a different direction unless it's broadsided by another satellite. Never seen that happen. Don Campbell says that in the late 60s, during one of their breaks, they actually saw the satellite schedule was listed in the Sudbury Star, a local paper back then. And one of the sightings that he had, along with other workers, is they saw the UFO scoop up one of our satellites, which disappeared for an entire year. Entire year. And then McLean's magazine reported a year later that the satellite was found again, quote unquote, found, traveling at the same speed, in the same orbit, after it had been released by the UFO. They were studying our technology. So imagine that, having that ability to replace put back in place a satellite that they scooped up. And they witnessed this from the top of the, well, at that time he was welding. He was a welder, his master welder. He'd actually worked, his welding abilities were so good, he actually welded the nose cone of one of the Thrasher submarines for the States down in Sarnia, yeah, southern Ontario, way back in the 60s. And I trust him. And if he told me that they saw a UFO scoop up a satellite, I believe him. And there's other stories that I've heard that just were confirmed by other people that didn't even know him. So it's like, wow, there's so much stuff being hidden from us and lied about. Yeah, I wouldn't even turn to the government for anything, you know. And now that we're learning, and one of the things I'm learning is that whoever's controlling the politicians, it's whoever they want in power, they put in power. So you know what? Voting doesn't matter. Nobody has a swing vote. There's no such thing as a swing vote. They either will put in power who they want will suit them best, you know. And so I'm going to stop voting. It's all bullshit. It's all set up, made up, corrupt. And if I follow my own path, I've gotten more truth that way than following the official channels, you know. So, and I pledge my allegiance to the planet. I will not ever pledge my allegiance to a particular country. The aliens don't see us as having borders. We look at our planet. There's no lines, you know, separating the countries. I've talked to people on the internet from Russia, from Sweden, whatever. We're all on the same page. It's the governments that are making us be enemies with other governments and other people. It's not the people themselves. They don't want war. They don't want all this stuff. They want openness. They want transparency. You know, they want a better life for everybody. With all these costs adding to us, like with hydro and oil, you know, and to tell us that there's no other alternative forms of energy, that's bullshit. You know, how are we supposed to survive? We're going to go the same way of the dinosaurs and the Romans and the Egyptian Empire if we keep this up. Pure and simple.
Another question from Paul in the Space Out Radio chat room on Spreaker. He is asking, Michel, what do you think about the Arecibo response, hoax or legit?
Oh, the Arecibo response. I would have to look into that. I didn't see that one. The one that surprised me even more was the reply we got through a couple of crop circle patterns near a radio telescope in the UK. In 1974, I believe, we sent out Pioneer 10 with a message and also a schematic of where we come from, what we look like. And this particular crop pattern, which appeared within the last 10 years, actually was their response to what we had sent out. And you look at the pattern, it indicated that they have a system where they have four moons or four orbiting satellites. The creature had a slightly larger head because there was like a very plain stick figure, if you will, representation of what they were like. And that convinced me that that along with the big wow, the one wow that they got also in the late 70s, I believe, that was something that kind of raised an eyebrow. But this recent Arecibo one, I haven't really looked at it. I heard about it, though. I definitely want to take a look and see what happened there.
Crop circles are just an amazing phenomenon because they are just an incredible piece of art, and the way they are spun. I mean, there's videos, I believe, out of the Netherlands showing two orbs kind of flowing over a wheat field, and then all of a sudden this crop circle appears. What did you think of that video, and what do you think is creating them?
I think that video is... If it's the same one, I think it's a snowflake pattern, and I think it's out of the UK. And one investigator who actually shot it, his name was Peter Sorensen, he was even skeptical about it, but I said, well, you shot the damn video, and the crop circle was there, the pattern was there the next day. All indications, the information seems to indicate that the crop circles are created within seconds. And unlike the skeptics or debunkers who will say the majority of them are fake, No, it's the other way around. There's very, very few fakes, and you can tell them apart very easily because the plants are damaged. If you're going to walk on them with ropes and boards, you're going to crush the plant, and they're not going to be not going to be primed for harvesting. The real crop circles, the majority of them are definitely real. They're very complex in mathematics, and they're created within seconds. There was a video that I did place on my website, and hopefully it'll be up and running in about a week. It's a documentary on crop circles, and there's a pilot who talks about flying over a field which was totally bare of any pattern, and 20 minutes later he flew back over. Coming back, and this is daytime, and there's a super large pattern that just appeared while he was gone, and that's within a span of an hour. And yet, you would have seen telltale signs of a horde of people like going there, like an entire army doing this. And I can't imagine. I mean, yeah, some of them have pulled them off, like doing them at night. But who would not notice anybody working with flashlights? I'm sorry, but I won't believe anybody that says that they can fake it just wearing like night vision goggles alone without having the area lit up so that they know what the hell they're doing. It can't be done. Whether they use ropes and boards or some kind of measurements, I mean, you can tell, you know, you're there long enough. If you're a smoker, you're going to be smoking cigarettes. You'll find cigarette butts. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to believe that somebody will clean up after themselves and clean up all their cigarette butts. There's no evidence. There's never been any tire tracks or whatever in the real patterns. It's just we're given the impression that most of them are fakes and very few of them are real. And the more real ones are just the simple circle ones. The complex ones are obvious creations by humans. And I just don't believe that. I don't believe that. And in one particular crop circle pattern in Manitoba, a porcupine was caught in the act of the circle being formed, and it was squished down in a spiral formation. Another formation that appeared in southern Ontario, a horse wouldn't walk through it because there's some kind of energy emanating from it. You can walk right close to a crop circle pattern, and your cell phone will stop working. Tractors will stop working. So that's something weird. That's not something that can be man-made that can have those side effects. There's no way. So people have to use their brain a little bit and really look at the data and the information being collected by Nancy Talbot and Linda Howe. I mean, Linda Howe, my friends are kind of wishy-washy about her. Yes, she got fooled by Richard Doty, but who doesn't get fooled once in a while, you know? We all get fooled or taken in or whatever, and then you recover from that and you say, okay, it's like me. When I get a report, I won't put anything out in the media until I'm absolutely sure, because the last thing I want is somebody look at me and say, ha, you got a fake case on your hands. You know, that means, you know, and people will assume, well, if that one case is fake, then the rest must be fake. So I said, you know what, believe what you want, but you know, you have to be careful. You're almost like you have to police yourself to make sure that you get the right information before you go public or to the media, because you don't want to be made look like a fool. But the crop circle patterns are definitely not fake. The majority of them, and it's really weird stuff. Like how do plants get magnetized? You know, it's not even a metal. It's an organic, like, you know, plant. And yet there's been that kind of evidence detected. There's a sound also being picked up by microphones, a shrilling sound emanating from the circles. And yet these small spheres, yeah, they have been also spotted over the formation. They don't necessarily go. I don't know how the process is done. The circle, the little balls of light don't necessarily go exactly where the pattern is laid down within seconds. But in that one footage, they just gently swoop over like a couple of, you know, small, tiny planes side by side, wing to wing, flying over, and all of a sudden parts of the crop circle lays down. Then two other spheres come from a different direction, and the branches of the snowflake form within seconds. That's pretty fascinating. It's telling me there's energy sources out there that we haven't even tapped into yet. You know, I believe in 1 square inch of air, there's particles in there that could probably generate enough power to run in a small city. You just need the collector, a converter, and a transmitter. Once you find that you've devised that device, you'll have free energy, you know? So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's been kept from us. And the reality about crop circles, the reality about UFOs, the reality about Bigfoot, the reality about Bermuda Triangle, Virgin Mary apparitions, ghosts. You know, I've studied and researched all that when in my young teenage years. And it's opened my eyes to a lot. And it's like you got to take one phenomenon at a time. And I decided to specialize into UFOs. Although I'm open to the other stuff for sure, you know, and finding out that, you know, I lived in a town called Hanmer, just north of Sudbury, and to find out that there was 14-inch footprints of Bigfoot, it still floors me because, to my mind, I always thought Bigfoot was out west in the Rockies, out by your end.
quick question from Steve here. He is saying, if crop circles are real, what do you think their purpose would be? Some sort of communication?
Yeah, they're trying to tell us something. Some crop circle patterns look like a cross-section of the inner planets. For instance, there's one particular pattern where the inner planets seem to be displayed, and yet the orbit where Earth is supposed to be, there's no Earth. So what is that supposed to mean? That if we continue on the path that we're following now, that will eventually annihilate ourselves or erase ourselves from history? I don't know, but I think a lot of the patterns are very complex in mathematics, and possibly all of them have a hidden meaning behind them. It's like I said before, like, you know, how you can't sit across the table and discuss anything with an insectoid. You're talking about two different origins, primate and insect. What, if anything, do you have in common with an insect? You know, so to try to understand their language, whoever's doing that, the crop circles, I couldn't even tell you which species is doing what. You know, anybody who's saying, like I said before, anybody claiming they know, oh, this is what this species does, and this is what they, you know, apart from the regular, the basic info we have on them, like their height, the fact that they're all telepathic, that's already known. It's the other stuff that's not known. When somebody comes along and says that they know all those answers, I know they're full of crap, because we haven't gotten that yet. The aliens are not volunteering everything. It'd be like giving a loaded gun to a monkey. You're not going to give everything to an inferior race or show him everything. Oh, you want to know about the universe? We'll tell you how everything works. No, we have to progress at our own pace, even though that the Roswell crash and everything that came before and after has accelerated that development tremendously, and we haven't been able to sociologically catch up to that knowledge and that information and technology. So we can't handle that technology just yet, because we're not at the same level spiritually and sociologically, you know, and intellectually. So we have to be given a break in understanding before we can actually go on and achieve more. You know, some people are trying to rush too much, like the military or whoever's behind the military, pushing them to do all this stuff in secrecy. They want to know everything and do everything and own everybody and rule over everybody. You know, you're doing too quick, too fast, it's not going to work. And there'll be a lot of headbutting, and it's not going to be a pretty picture.
Michelle, we have officially run out of time tonight.
Wow.
Quick 3 hours, my friend. Quick 3 hours. I appreciate you taking the time. Tell us where we can get some information and our listeners can take part in it as well.
Well, they can look for my website, which is newforest.com. New Forest basically stands, it's the first letter for the following words. It's Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study. So N as in Normand, O UFO, R as in research and S as in study. It started off as an archive from the newspaper clippings covering Northern Ontario, but then it definitely branched off to include everything from that I could get my hands on from around the world, just to show that it's not just a North American phenomenon, but it's a worldwide phenomenon, and it involves all of us. that we have a stake in all this knowledge, and no small group should be the sole owner of all that's come from this research. It should be shared freely, and with knowledge comes progress in a very good way.
Michel Deschamps, thank you so much for being on Spaced Out Radio tonight. You hold on, my friend. I got to wrap this thing up because Mr. Ron Bumblefoot Thal is rocking in the background, and that means it's time to call it another night here on the SOR. Tomorrow night, Samantha Mowat, all the way from Scotland on her vacation. It's not stopping her from making her monthly debut on this show. She does it the every second Tuesday of the month. 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Remember, if you want this episode to hear it again or hear anything else, you go to spacedoutradio.com. You go to our YouTube channel. Tune in, or you can download it on iTunes. We're going to rock it out here as we will talk to you in exactly 21 hours from now. Have a good one, space travelers. I'm out of here.